Thank you for joining us today for another sermon podcast from Flushing Community Church. We desire to experience the transforming love of God and share it with others. It's our hope that you will find today's recording encouraging for your personal journey of faith.
So, legacy is what you've been talking about. I read through everything from last week and what Terry talked about and all the steps we need to take to leave a legacy, the planning that goes into it, the example that we set forth as we pass on a legacy to those who come behind us. But I'm here to talk about the legacy that we've been handed. That there are stories out there competing for your allegiance. And especially in an election year, there are stories calling for your devotion. Calling that you would live out of this story or that. What am I talking about? Well, there's a great conquering story that's calling for your devotion. That's what life's about. It's about conquering challenges and pulling yourself up by your bootstraps and maybe even making America great again. I don't know. There are victim stories that are out there in the church world and in politics and in our country calling for your devotion. Live out of this story. It'll give you an orienting point. It'll focus your attention. It'll give you some talking points to your friends. Live out of this identity. And there's all sorts of versions of the American Dream story and all these other ones. So I'm here to talk about the story that's been handed to us as the people of God. That is well worth giving ourselves to. That deserves our devotion. That will anchor us and orient us differently than these other peripheral stories that long for our devotion. Isaiah 51, 1 and 2 says, "Listen to me, you who pursue righteousness and who seek the Lord. Look to the rock from which you were cut and the quarry from which you were hewn. Look to Abraham, your father, and Sarah, who gave you birth. When I called him, he was but one, and I blessed him and made him many." So these stories and what it means to be the people of God go back to Abraham. And so my goal today is to remind us of that story and then remind us of the story of this place, this particular people of God, and maybe reorient and launch forward from that. You know the story of Abraham, probably. He was old. He was from a people that didn't know God. He stepped into this unfolding story a bit unaware, maybe. His story really begins in Genesis chapter 12, if you want to look there, to how it all began with God. The first six words. The Lord said to Abram. I think that the first thing that we as the people of God need to hearken back and look at and latch hold of again is that we are hewn from a quarry and carved from a rock who had a sensitivity to the voice of God. Abraham had a sensitivity to the voice of God. We don't know what that looked like, how that happened, how long it took. We just know at some point Abraham got the message that God had something for him to do and someone to become. How you doing with that? How is your sensitivity to the voice of God? How do you rate that lately? Because our world is very noisy. It's a different type of noise than probably Abram and Sarah faced. But yet the things that clamor for our attention, the things that want our emotional energy, the things that want us to give ourselves to, the noise of social media, the noise of the newspaper, all of those things. But somehow, before the law was given, before commands were given, before anything that we had, before the Bible, before any of that, there was a man named Abraham who had developed a sensitivity to the voice of God. And yet we have all these tools to help us do that, and we're more distracted than ever. We come from a story and a history of a people who are sensitive to the voice of God. The story of this place falls in line with that story of Abraham. And let me tell you, it took God a long time and many avenues to get my attention. It began with this uneasiness, and maybe that's the way it began for Abraham. It was 20 years ago. Can you believe that? 1996, I was a youth pastor in Cincinnati, and I had this stirring and uneasiness and funk and sickness and all this stuff in me that things were not right. Things were off center. I was in a world that I was familiar with, doing a job I knew how to do, and at the same time, everything seemed to be in flux. That there was this stirring that I could not get away from, and I didn't even know how to identify it. That was God's way of breaking in and trying to get me to tend to His voice. Did I hear Him audibly? No. But this inescapable impression on my heart came in the form of a question. Don't you hate that sometimes? Daryl, does your yes still mean yes to anything? I grew up in a Christian home, so going to church and following Jesus, and that's just kind of what we did. And so as a child and coming to know Christ in a very childlike way, and as a teenager kind of opening the closet of my heart and giving more access and saying yes to ministry, it was like for months in this awful stirring, he was saying, yeah, I know you said yes as a kid, and I know you said yes as a teenager, and I know you said yes to ministry, but does your yes still mean yes? Could you just silence some of this noise? And he helped me because it seemed like everywhere I turned, I was confronted with that question. Sermons people would preach that had no idea what I was going through. A letter or two that I got from friends who had no idea what I was going through. Conversations that just kind of happened. Does your yes still mean yes to anything? He used those things that were available to Abraham, but he also used Scripture that Abraham didn't have to his advantage. I remember being in the basement of the church I was working at as a youth pastor, wondering, what in the world? I never wanted to start a church. I don't know how to do that. And yet I had crossed taken some steps, and the ball was rolling, and I wasn't sure what to do. My replacement had already been hired at the place where I was working. I was didn't know where we were going to live up here. And in the basement of this church, I was filling up a box of prizes for my last youth event. And really, I was just going through devotional books and Bibles so I wouldn't have to pack them to move. And I was just trying to give them away as door prizes. So, you know, you do the old quick thumb through. You just kind of go, okay, this one's got no notes or nothing in it. I'm throwing it in the box. And as I was working through my shelves and filling up this box, I was getting beat down. What are you doing? You are an idiot. You are the biggest fool. You have no place to live. You have no people. You have no income. You have no insurance. You have nothing. You are an idiot. Throw in the box. Feeling the weight of that. Listening to that story. And God, in His loving, wonderful way, as I thumbed through a Bible that I didn't remember even receiving from some crazy modern translation before the Message even existed, I flipped through and saw a flash of yellow highlight. Backed up, found it. Habakkuk 2:2-4. Read that lately? I've never read it. I started to think, before I even read, where did this come from? And it was a giveaway at a youth conference that I went to, and must be the morning speaker spoke from that day, and I highlighted it, and just never remembered. But as I thumbed back in this translation that I've never seen since, what was highlighted, I think I can make it through this. Write my message in the form of a vision. Write it clearly so you can read it at a glance. You can trust what I say. What I say about the future, it may take a long time, but it will happen. I, the Lord, refuse anyone who is proud, but only those who live by faith are acceptable to me. See, God had to work hard for me to pay attention to His voice. But He did. And He helped me in that moment, and from that moment, to try to pay more attention to His voice. That is the rock you are hewn from. Not from me, but from Abraham. I just kind of got to experience a slice of it. And so as we move forward, I didn't mean to say we, but I guess it's we. As you look ahead, recapture that sensitivity to the voice of God. The next week, in the next 2 weeks, as you make plans and have meetings, listen to the voice of God, because the voice of God rarely makes sense with conventional wisdom. If you figure out what you're going to give based on what you've got left over at the end of the month, that's probably not what God's asking you to give. And for those of you who've been around a long time, you know how much I hate to talk about money, but that's as blunt as I can get. That's probably the wrong gift. God's voice leads us to sacrifice, and God's voice leads us to stretch. And He knows what that is for each of us. Abraham was sensitive to the voice of God, and as we move forward, that's what's required of us. I think the story we come from, the legacy that we've been handed, comes in the next few words of verse 1. Leave your country, your people, and your father's house, and go to the land I'll show you. It's like taking a trip with your kids, and they're wondering when you're going to get there, and you'll just say, I'll let you know when we get there. So Abraham not only had a sensitivity to God's voice, Abraham had the faith to go. Go. That is part of the Christian story. That is part of the story of God's people. It always involves going. Going with your feet, going in your heart, going with your volunteering, going with stretching and leading, going and giving. It always involves going. Always, 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 we're called to leave and go somehow, some way in the plan of God. Abraham did that. He left the place he was familiar with. He left the people he was familiar with. He left the way things just worked and were normal. All that he was familiar with, he left. For me, that meant leaving youth ministry. That meant stepping into an area of ministry I didn't know anything about and didn't necessarily want to know anything about for a long period of my life. It meant thinking about those who didn't go to church rather than spending my life taking care of the kids who came to church. It was a transition and a leaving of the familiar. And it wasn't just me. First people I talked to, and I know this is new, but this is what God was going to ask me to do and us to do. I talked to this young couple that was engaged. And they weren't sure what was going to happen in their lives, but I knew if at all possible I wanted them to be a part. And sometimes you need to just talked to Carrie Burva about how God relocated to law school for her to be a part of this. I need to ask her that story. Because it is a story hewn from that same quarry. Going and leaving and following and embracing what God was up to. Our college friends, Bob and Becky Denny, hate days like today. They are Southerners at heart and mostly in practice. And we told them what we were going to do. They came. They moved from Atlanta and took a job here to help plant this church. It involved leaving and going and stepping into what God was doing. And through the years, there have been others. You know, Dale and Sandy Massey. And I should stop mentioning names because many of you sit there. But many, many, many. That is the quarry from which you were hewn. That is part, the central part of the people of God. And so, as you approach these next couple years, attempting to do great things for God, paying attention to His voice, He's calling you to leave something. He's calling you to leave comfort. Because it's in those moments that we experience Him most intimately. When we're most open to be used by Him to impact the world around us. Abraham had faith to go. Will we? That's the thing. We moved 6 times before we inhabited this building. They weren't all different places. We started in one house on Sunday nights. We went through all the one another passages in the Bible. We just figured, what does it mean? What are all those, you know, bury one another's burdens, forgive one another, love one another. We went through all of those. And anybody could come. We just figured we better figure out what is asked of the church and how we were going to try to treat each other and live this way. So we started in one house. And then we moved to another house and switched to Sunday mornings, which was really kind of awesome and weird. You know, it's one thing to have a discussion and have coffee and donuts at somebody's house on a Sunday morning and call it church. But when you drag out the keyboard into the living room, everybody's like, this is really weird. This is very cultish. We did that for about a year, year and a half. Then we moved to Oak Street for 1 month. The month of February, 1997. Practice whatever we were doing, because we knew Palm Sunday of 99. I got my year wrong there. Palm Sunday of 99. We were gonna open the doors at Krause School, so we moved there. During that time and a little before, the Masseys started coming, and they owned the building downtown, the Performing Arts Center at that time. So we wanted to be there because we could have all our stuff in the same building and we wouldn't have to put it on a pallet jack and drag it to the barn and the shed at Krause. And so we moved from Krause to the Massey's building. We were there a couple weeks, but we kind of did that prematurely and had to move back to Krause. And then finally we moved back to Massey's building. By then we had found this piece of property. We were committed to Flushing, you know, because you get in these church planting modes and these strategic things and you get swept into this business mindset, which is nothing like Jesus. So you want to be that way, you know, by expressway. And we kind of just had this sense, we're here for Flushing. Who cares if we're on this side of Seymour Road? It's us. Priscilla Harris went to work like a dog on a bone and she found out who owned this piece of property. And after several meetings and much prayer, we were able to buy it, 20 acres. Quite a bit less than Mr. Niemer was asking. We went in with a show of force, though. Sam and Bob Denny and Mark Burva and people who knew what they were talking about. I just kind of went along. And so because we had property and plans, then that opened the door for us to rent the junior high. What's it called now? Early something. And we were there for 2 years. And so there was a lot of going. There was a lot of leaving. But each time we left, we tried to go to a place that had at least another door. We're going to need two or three more greeters. We're going to need a couple more nursery workers. We're going to need to welcome people differently at this place. We're going to need a little more help setting up. This, what you're talking about, it's just the next phase. It's just another leaving and going. It's just another opportunity for some other people to step in, to leave their comfort zone of not really wanting to say hello to people or being nervous around visitors, to embracing that and being stretched, giving a little bit more, stepping out a little more in faith in the way they operate. It always involves going somewhere, even if it's just out the back. That's the quarry. That's the stone. That's the story of Abraham, the people who came behind right up through us. Third thing, there's always got to be three, isn't it? Weird. Comes in the last couple verses of chapter 12. I will make you into a great nation and I will bless you. I will make your name great, and you will be a blessing. I will bless those who bless you, and whoever curses you, I will curse, and all the people of the earth will be blessed through you. Now for Abraham, that meant a foreshadowing and an early indicator that the Christ, the Messiah, was coming. That the whole world is going to be blessed through his obedience. But this idea that Abraham was a conduit of God's love is what I want us to latch on to recapture. Pay attention to God's voice. He had faith to go. But beyond all that, in my opinion, he was able to hold on to the fact that this was about something bigger than him and his. Nineteen years ago, there was only a handful of you in this room that we knew. Somehow, to be a conduit of God's love and blessing, God was able to help us to hold on to that. To build this facility was not for us. We had begged, borrowed, and rented and stolen gyms for, 4 years. And that still was the biggest need in our community when we built this. Confession, I willingly underbuilt child space in this building. Because I knew someday some passionate, caring people and probably another pastor could raise more money to build children's space than anything else. But was space needed in our community. Matt Burba texted me last week. He was texting me during church. And he said, they just said that there are over 1,000 people who came through our church for upward basketball. We didn't know about that 20 years ago. To be a conduit of God's love was part of the legacy that we've been handed. What you do in the next few years isn't even about you, and it's not about yours. 20 years from now, Terry may come back and tell a story this time. I hope he does. Maybe he'll still be here. But I hope that's the way it goes. What about all this other stuff with Abraham?
What about him being afraid, lying about his wife, being a sister, and what about all that other stuff that doesn't make sense, like getting ready to sacrifice his son? And what about, you know, I don't know. I think I can just say that if you kind of lump all that in and be reminded of how he handled his twisted nephew Lot and the way that he pled for people's safety and lives in wicked cities, the offerings that he made to foreign kings for the glory of God, through all his faithfulness, foolishness, frailty, failures, those are all the F words I could think of, or use. It wasn't about him. And so, that's part of our legacy. Our failures, our frailty, but God's faithfulness that covers all that. We as Wesleyans, theologically, do not believe that God is pulling levers and strings. How many remember me saying that? Like other traditions who seem to think, and they can think that, that every molecule in the universe is controlled by God, we do not believe that theologically. We believe that God longs to partner with us in renewing all things. We believe that His Spirit wants to move in us and take up residence in us individually and collectively in such a way that we can collaborate, that His kingdom may come on earth as it is in heaven. So as you look ahead, listening, growing in faith to go, tempting and praying to be a conduit of God's love and blessing, God's plan and purposes will go forward. The question at this point is, do you want to be a part? Because someday the mission of this church will move forward with buildings and people, programs and stuff, and meeting needs in the community and all that other stuff. But in 20 years to say, didn't know what we're doing, probably weren't doing it right, but we joined in, we pitched in, we stretched, we went, we gave, we loved to be a part of that. That's the legacy. Say yes. That's what we're about. Not just Flushing Community Church of the Nazarene, but that's what the people of God are about. Father, we thank you that we don't have to sit here and figure it out. You have laid out through the power of stories recorded throughout time what it looks like to be your people. And I pray that you would take these little threads that I've tried to pull out today. That you would bind them around our hearts. That you would use them to cause us to consider deeply where we are with you, where we are in this community, how you want to work in us as families, and as a church family. And that your faithfulness that goes beyond and covers all our sin and shame and foolishness. We would drive us even greater to you and into our community. Amen.
Additional downloads and resources are available by visiting flushingcommunity.org. Join us this Sunday as we gather to experience God's transforming love together.